In the weeks that followed Jesus' resurrection from the dead, he made several appearances to the disciples and to others in and around Israel. In the chapter before our reading for today, Jesus appears in a locked room. He shows his wounds and his scars to Thomas, who's full of doubt. And it is in this way that Jesus reveals that he has defeated death. Something new is emerging in this world, something to celebrate and to get excited about. And so Jesus offers words of hope, peace, comfort. And he reminds them that soon they're going to be filled with the Holy Spirit and commissioned for service to the wider world. Soon they will answer the call. Preach the good news of God's love for all people, to make a difference in the world. But for now, they must eagerly await the day of Pentecost, when they will officially begin their new mission and ministry. And I wonder if the excitement in the room the first time Jesus appeared, if it wasn't unlike the energy that's in a gym at the pep rally before the state championship, right? Filled with this amazing experience, did Matthew and John give high fives to each other? Did Martha start getting a clap going, you know? Maybe Peter gave a very inspirational and spirit-filled speech about how they were going to go out there and be this new thing called the church. They're ready to get started on this exciting adventure. But it seems that Jesus' timing and Peter's schedule were not quite in sync. There were still people that Jesus needed to appear to encourage, to invite into the process. The disciples still needed to do the patient work of praying, listening for God's voice, to prepare their hearts to receive all that God had in store for them. And judging by our reading for today, after a few days, Peter was getting a bit antsy. "I'm going fishing," he announces to the group there, which is an odd thing to say, given all the amazing things going on in this post-resurrection world around them. But Peter figures the fish are biting, and so he gathers his nets and gear and heads out. Other disciples join him as they make their way to the Sea of Galilee. Seasoned fishermen, the group knew these waters like the back of their hands. They knew all the best fishing holes, the ones that are passed down in a family that you don't tell anyone else about, so they knew where to cast their nets and when, what part of the day when they'd get the biggest haul. But despite their mastery and skill, despite fishing all night long, by morning they still caught nothing. At dawn, they saw a stranger standing on the shore. And they didn't recognize him as Jesus. The stranger told them to cast their nets on the other side. Maybe it was the familiar sound of his voice, something soothing. It was just a feeling in their gut. For whatever reason, the disciples decide to toss their nets out once more. And this time, they catch an enormous load of fish, a fish of all kinds. And John's symbolic language and the significance of that number, 153, it's lost on us as modern readers today, but the meaning is not. Disciples bring in an ecumenical collection, inclusive and diverse. This fact will be important later on. But for now, the disciples are simply astounded to meet Jesus once again as they're going about their work as fishermen. It's interesting. And after 3 years of following Jesus, after countless miracles, after experiencing the power of the resurrection, seeing Jesus alive in front of them, the disciples go back to their old jobs. Really? I mean, that's your response to everything that has just happened? Just go back to the old ways of living and doing things? I just wonder if when Peter and the other disciples were out on the water again, if they didn't feel like something was missing. If this didn't feel just right anymore. They weren't the same after following Jesus, and life couldn't go back to the way it was, even if they'd wanted it to. As a society, we're suckers for nostalgia. I mean, we take every opportunity we can to try and relive the glory of the past. I was reminded of this the other day when my wife and I watched the first episode of this new Netflix show called Fuller House. You know this? Now, for those of you in the room who are late 80s, early 90s pop culture trivia experts, you'll know that Fuller House is the continuation of another show called Full House. Right? The original pilot of this show, it's fairly simple. A young widowed father named Danny Tanner enlists the help of his brother-in-law and childhood friend to move in and help him raise his three young children. Shenanigans and heartwarming moments ensue. Okay? Now, the show is known for many things. It launched the career of Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen. John Stamos had some great Elvis impersonations, and there were many dozens of catchphrases that this show produced. So, after being off the air since 1995, what could be more fun than doing it all over again, right? The premise of the show Fuller House remains true to the original. The cast has returned. DJ Tanner, who was a young daughter, now all grown up, she is a young, recent widow who's going to enlist the help of her sister and her childhood friend to move in and help her raise her three young sons. Does this sound familiar? Right? And in the pilot episode, you watch as the studio audience claps and laugh every time an old cast member says their catchphrase, and you're just kind of waiting for it. They even go back and they recreate some of the meaningful scenes from the original pilot episode. We're just doing the same thing over again, almost 30 years apart. And if you're a fan of the original show, then these moments when a cast member returns, they give you those warm fuzzies inside, and then they deliver that line, like, "Oh, I remember that. That was great." And if you have no idea what I'm talking about, imagine sitting in front of your TV for 20 minutes watching someone else's family tell inside jokes to one another. Right? That's what this show is all about. So the challenge for producers of the show is, how do you do anything new when the whole premise of your show is about the past? How do you take risks? How do you connect with a new audience that doesn't get all the old jokes and doesn't automatically get all the warm fuzzies? The truth is, you have to do something new because you can't ever go back, even if you wanted to. As the saying goes, no person ever steps in the same river twice, or it's not the same river. They're not the same person. And perhaps this is what the disciples learned back at their nets, out on the sea, catching nothing and feeling unfulfilled. Jesus meets the disciples on the banks of the way we've always done things, on the shore of what we're used to and calls them anew. Gathers them around a fire so they can share a meal together. This is an intimate moment that Jesus is sharing with them. It's growing out of their relationship together. It's a small group gathered around a campfire, breaking off pieces of bread as they pass it around. They're laughing about what they're going to do with all this fish that they've just caught. No one is ever going to believe this story when they tell it later on. As they sink into full and satisfied stomachs, Jesus turns to Peter, and three times he asks, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Now, Peter doesn't seem to realize that Jesus is giving him the opportunity to make up for the three times that Peter denied Jesus during the trial. And each time, Peter responds, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." So Jesus tells Peter, "Feed my sheep." Now, when you read this passage in its original Greek, John is cluing us into some things with his language, the word that he uses for love. It tells us a great deal about the meaning of this conversation here. See, back in chapter 13, Jesus was gathered with the disciples for another meal, and he said to them, "A new commandment I give you, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, so you should love one another." And in our reading for today, Jesus is renewing Peter's commission to service. His charge to Peter, Jesus is reminding him that to keep that commandment, Peter must put his love for Jesus into practice by feeding and tending to Jesus' sheep. He is reminding Peter about what it means to love Jesus. To love Jesus, you have to love people the way Jesus loved them. And this is how we show that we're followers of Jesus. When we care for people when they can't do anything in return, when we welcome people into our community no matter where they come from or what they've done in their past, when we practice forgiveness and mercy, when we work to build a more just and peaceful world, when we live and love like this in all of our relationships, that is when we show that we follow Jesus, that we care for those he cares for. And so Jesus' charge to Peter is not about a loving emotion. It's about loving action. I mean, the difference between the love that we often read here in emotion and the love that Jesus is talking about, it's almost as far separated as the kind of love teenagers on a first date talk about and couples that have been married for a lifetime. Now, one is a pretty flame, but it's easily extinguished. The other is deep burning and unquenchable, where we're talking about a love that is courageous and daring, a love that is unwavering and committed regardless of what comes its way. Jesus calls Peter, like he calls you and me, to follow him. To follow him to places we normally wouldn't go, to help those in need, to extend friendship and grace to others we might pass by. Jesus stands on the shore of our lives in moments when there's no time for we've never done it this way, no time for returning to the what we're used to. Jesus meets us here today to call us anew to go out into the world and practice love in action. Not turn around or go back. not to fall into the comfort of our old habits and old ways of doing things, but to look forward with courage and embrace the love that God will bring to life in us for the sake of others. This is what it means to love God, feed His sheep. I think the meaning of this passage today is a timely one for us at Vienna Baptist. We're just coming off of a 7-week congregational prayer journey, and this week I met with our prayer group coordinator, Trula Duane, and our worship planning team to read through the summary reports our prayer groups created. And I'm not going to spoil the surprise for you, because this is what we'll be presenting next week at our prayer banquet after service, but I will tell you that I was blown away by the response of our congregation. It's incredible. Your learnings and discoveries, I really just can't wait until each of you share with one another next week what you heard, because I think you're going to be encouraged and inspired. We find ourselves in a similar place as the disciples the week that followed Jesus' resurrection. God is doing a new thing in us and through us, and we are excited about what the future holds. And we know that we're in the midst of a creative time in the life of our church, that we're being called to go out to love and serve our community. But we're also in this time in which we must continue to prayerfully listen and discern. The conversation about growth and renewal, the discernment process that began in our small prayer groups, it's going to continue on. Continues to our banquet. It continues to our church-wide retreat on the 22nd and 23rd, when we'll talk more. We'll get to know our community and ourselves better. We'll have other opportunities to learn and share in the weeks ahead. And this is all part of that patient process to prepare our hearts to receive God's vision for our future, to respond with bold mission. So I'm excited to be on this journey with you. It's a journey that we can't turn back from. Can't return to our old familiar nets, but we look forward to what God is doing and calling us anew. So I want to challenge you this week. Just because the formal process of our prayer groups is over, it doesn't mean that our discernment process is. And so whether you were part of a small group or not, I ask that you would continue to pray for our church in this season, as we are discerning together who God is calling us to be, what God is calling us to do. But this isn't just something we do corporately. This next week, spend some time praying and reflecting on your own. What new thing is God calling you to do in your life? What risk are you being asked to take? What new thing are you being called to try so that you can be involved in what God is up to in our community? Today, may we have just enough daring to try something new, and just enough foolishness to follow this one who calls us to come, follow him, to feed his sheep.